Chapter 3. Companions got possession of that of Persia. In a word he said, so much that Miss Sun resolved to follow his advice, and calling up all hands, he told them that a great number of them had resolved with him upon a life of liberty, and had done him the honor to create him chief. That he designed to force no man, and be guilty of that injustice he blamed in others. Therefore, if any were averse to the following his fortune, which he promised should be the same to all, he desired they would declare themselves, and he would set them ashore, whence they might return with conveniency. Apostrophe having made an end, they one and all cried, Vive la Captain Miss Sun a Sun Lieutenant La Sivant Caraccioli. God bless Captain Miss Sun and his learned Lieutenant Caraccioli. Miss Sun thanked them for the honor they conferred upon him, and promised he would use the power they gave for the public good only, and hoped, as they had the bravery to assert their liberty, they would be as unanimous in the preserving it, and stand by him in what should be found expedient for the good of all, that he was their friend and companion, and should never exert his power, or think himself other than their comrade, but when the necessity of affairs should oblige him. They shouted a second time, Vive la Capitan! He, after this, desired they would choose their subaltern officers, and give them power, to consult and conclude upon what might be for the common interest, and bind themselves down by an oath, to agree to what such officers and he should determine. This they readily gave in to. The schoolmaster they chose for second lieutenant. John Bessus they nominated for third, and the boatswain, and a quartermaster, named Matthew Latondu, with the gunner, they desired might be their representatives in council. The choice was approved, and that everything might pass methodically, and with general approbation, they were called into the great cabin, and the question put, what course they should steer. The captain proposed the Spanish coast as the most probable to afford them rich prizes. This was agreed upon by all. The boatswain then asked what colors they should fight under, and advised black as most terrifying. But Caraccioli objected that they were no pirates, but men who were resolved to assert that liberty which God and nature gave them, and own no subjection to any, farther than was for the common good of all. That indeed, obedience to governors was necessary, when they knew and acted up to the duty of their function. Were vigilant guardians of the people's rights and liberties, saw that justice was equally distributed, were barriers against the rich and powerful, when they attempted to oppress the weaker, when they suffered none of the one hand to grow immensely rich, either by his own, or his ancestors' encroachments, nor on the other, any to be wretchedly miserable, either by falling into the hands of villains, unmerciful creditors, or other misfortunes. While he had eyes impartial, and allowed nothing but merit, to distinguish between man and man, and instead of being a burthen to the people by his luxurious life, he was by his care for, and protection of them, a real father, and in everything acted with the equal, and impartial justice of a parent. But when a governor, who is the minister of the people, thinks himself raised to this dignity, that he may spend his days in pomp and luxury, looking upon his subjects as so many slaves, created for his use and pleasure, and therefore leaves them, and their affairs to the immeasurable avarice and tyranny of someone whom he has chosen for his favorite, when nothing but oppression, poverty, and all the miseries of life flow from such an administration. That he lavishes away the lives and fortunes of the people, either to gratify his ambition, or to support the cause of some neighboring prince, that he may in return, strengthen his hands should his people exert themselves in defense of their native rights, or should he run into unnecessary wars, by the rash and thoughtless counsels of his favorite, and not able to make head against the enemy he has rashly or wantonly brought upon his hands, and by a peace which is the present case of France, as everyone knows, by supporting King James, and afterwards proclaiming his son, and drain the subject, should the people's trade be willfully neglected, for private interests, and while their ships of war lie idle in their harbors, suffer their vessels to be taken, And the enemy not only intercepts all commerce, but insults their coasts. It speaks a generous and great soul to shake off the yoke, and if we cannot redress our wrongs, withdraw from sharing the miseries which meaner spirits submit to, and scorn to yield to the tyranny. Such men are we, and, if the world, as experience may convince us it will, makes war upon us, the law of nature empowers us, not only to be on the defensive, but also on the offensive part. As we then do not proceed upon the same ground with pirates, who are men of dissolute lives and no principles, let us scorn to take their colors. Ours is a brave, a just, an innocent, and a noble cause, the cause of liberty. I therefore advise a white ensign, with liberty painted in the fly, and if you like the motto, a Deo Libertate, for God and liberty, as an emblem of our uprightness and resolution. The cabin door was left open, and the bulkhead which was of canvas rowled up, the steerage being full of men, who lent an attentive ear, they cried, liberty, liberty. We are free men, colon vive the brave captain Miss Sun and the noble lieutenant Caraccioli. This short council breaking up, everything belonging to the deceased captain, and the other officers, and men lost in the engagement, was brought upon deck and overhauled, the money ordered to be put into a chest, and the carpenter to clap on a padlock for, and give a key to, every one of the council. Miss Sun telling them, all should be in common, and the particular avarice of no one should defraud the public. When the plate Monsieur Furbin had, was going to the chest, the men unanimously cried out avast, keep that out for the captain's use, as a present from his officers and four masked men. Miss Sun thanked them, the plate was returned to the great cabin, and the chest secured according to orders. Miss Sun then ordered his lieutenants and other officers to examine who among the men were in most want of clothes, and to distribute those of the dead men impartially, which was done with a general content and applause of the whole crew, all but the wounded being upon deck. Miss Sun from the barricade spoke to the following purpose, that since they had unanimously resolved to seize upon and defend their liberty, which ambitious men had usurped, and that this could not be esteemed by impartial judges other than a just and brave resolution, he was under an obligation to recommend to them a brotherly love to each other, the banishment of all private piques and grudges, and a swift agreement and harmony among themselves. That in throwing off the yoke of tyranny, of which the action spoke an abhorrence, he hoped none would follow the example of tyrants, and turn his back upon justice, for when equity was trodden underfoot, misery, confusion, and mutual distrust naturally followed. Apostrophe he also advised them to remember there was a supreme, the adoration of which reason and gratitude prompted us, and our own interests would engage us, as it is best to be of the surest side, and after life was allowed possible, to conciliate. That he was satisfied men who were born and bred in slavery, by which their spirits were broke, and were incapable of so generous a way of thinking, who, ignorant of their birthright, and the sweets of liberty, danced to the music of their chains, which was, indeed, the greater part of the inhabitants of the globe, would brand this generous crew with the insidious name of pirates, and think it meritorious to be instrumental in their destruction. Self-preservation, therefore, and not a cruel disposition, obliged him to declare war against all such as should refuse him the entry of their ports, and against all who should not immediately surrender and give up what their necessities required, but in a more particular manner against all European ships and vessels, as concluded implacable enemies. And I do now, said he, declare such war, and, at the same time, recommend to you my comrades a humane and generous behavior towards your prisoners, which will appear by so much more the effects of a noble soul, as we are satisfied we should not meet the same treatment should our ill fortune, or more properly our disunion, or want of courage, give us up to their mercy. After this, he required a muster should be made, and there were able hands 235 sick and wounded, As they were mustered, they were sworn. After affairs were thus settled, they shaped their course the Spanish West Indies, but resolved, in the way, to take a week or 10 days' cruise in the windward passage from Jamaica, because most merchantmen, which were good sailors, and did not slay for convoy, took this as the shorter cut for England. Off St. Christopher's they took an English sloop becalmed, with their boats. They took out of her a couple of puncheons of rum, and half a dozen hogsheads of sugar. She was a New England sloop, bound for Boston, and without offering the least violence to the men, or stripping them, they let her go. The master of the sloop was Thomas Butler, who owned, he never met with so candid an enemy as the French man of war, which took him the day he left St. Christopher's. They met with no other booty in their way, till they came upon their station, when after 3 days, they saw a sloop which had the impudence to give them chase. Captain Miss Sun asked what could be the meaning that the sloop stood for them. One of the men, who was acquainted with the West Indies, told him it was a Jamaica privateer, and he should not wonder if he clapped him aboard. I am, said he, no stranger to their way of working, and this despicable fellow, as those who don't know a Jamaica privateer may think him, it is 10 to 1, will give you some trouble. It now grows towards evening, and you'll find, as soon as he has discovered your force, he'll keep out of the reach of your guns till the 12 o'clock watch is changed at night, and he'll then attempt to clap you aboard, with hopes to carry you in the hurry. Wherefore, Captain, if you will give me leave to advise you, let every man have his small arms, and at 12, let the bell ring as usual, and rather more noise than ordinary be made, as if the one watch was turning in, and the other out, in a confusion and hurry, and I'll engage he will venture to enter his men. The fellow's advice was approved and resolved upon, and the sloop worked, as he said she would, for upon coming near enough, to make distinctly the force of the victor, on her throwing out French colors, she, the sloop, clapped upon a wind, the victor gave chase, but without hopes of gaining upon her, she went so well to windward, that she could spare the ship some points in her sheet, and yet wrong her. At dusk of the even, the French had lost sight of her, but about 11 at night, they saw her anchoring up their windward bow, which confirmed the sailors' opinion that she would attempt to board them, as she did at the pretended change of the watch. There being little or no wind, she lashed to the bowsprit of the victor and entered her men, who were very quietly taken, as they entered and tumbled down the fore hatch, where they were received by others, and bound without noise, not one of the privateers killed, few hurt, and only one Frenchman wounded. The victor the better part of the sloop's men secured, they boarded in their turn, when the privateers suspecting some stratagem, were endeavoring to cut their lashing and get off. Thus the Englishman caught a Tartar. The prisoners being all secured, the captain charged his men not to discover, through a desire of augmenting their number, the account they were upon. The next morning Monsieur Miss Sun called for the captain of the privateer. He told him, he could not, but allow him a brave fellow, to venture upon a ship of his countenance, and for that reason he should meet treatment which men of his profession seldom afforded the prisoners they made. He asked him how long he had been out, what was his name, and what he had on board. He answered he was but just come out, that he was the first sail he had met with, and should have thought himself altogether as lucky, not to have spoke with him, that his name was Harry Ramsay, and what he had on board were racks, powder, ball, and some few half anchors of rum. Ramsay was ordered into the gun room, and a council being held in the public manner aforesaid, the bulkhead of the great cabin rowled up. On their conclusion, the captain of the privateer was called in again, when Captain Miss Sun told him he would return him his sloop, and restore him and his men to their liberty, without stripping or plundering of anything, but what prudence obliged him to, their ammunition and small arms, if he would give him his word and honor, and his men to take an oath, not to go out on the privateer account in 6 months, after they left him. that he did not design to continue that station above a week longer, at the expiration of which time he would let them go. Ramsay, who had a new sloop, did not expect this favor, which he thanked him for, and promised punctually to comply with the injunction, which his men as readily swore to, though they had no design to keep the oath. The time being expired, he and his men were put on board their own sloop. At going over the ship's side, Ramsay begged Monsieur Misson would allow him powder for a salute, by way of thanks, but he answered him, the ceremony was needless, and he expected no other return than that of keeping his word, which indeed Ramsay did. Some of his men had found it more to their advantage to have been as religious. At parting, Ramsay gave the ship three cheers, and Misson had the complaisance to return one, which Ramsay, answering with three more, made the best of his way for Jamaica, and at the east end of the island met with the Diana, who, upon advice, turned back. The victor steered for Carthagena, off which port they cruised some days, but meeting with nothing in the seas, they made for Porto Bello. In their way they met with two Dutch traders, who had letters of marque, and were just come upon the coast, the one had 20, the other 24 guns. Misson engaged them, and they defended themselves with a great deal of resolution and gallantry. And as they were manned at a peak, he durst not venture to board either of them, for fear of being at the same time boarded by the other. His weight of metal gave him a great advantage over the Dutch, though they were 2-1. Besides, their business, as they had cargoes, was to get off, if possible, wherefore they made a running fight, though they took care to stick close to one another. They maintained the fight for above 6 hours, when Misson, enraged at this obstinacy, and fearing, if by accident they should bring a mast, or topmast, by the board, they would get from him. He was resolved to sink the larger ship of the two, and accordingly ordered his men to bring all their guns to bear amidship, then running close alongside of him, to raise their metal. His orders being punctually obeyed, he poured in a broadside, which opened such a gap in the Dutch ship, that she went directly to the bottom, and every man perished. He then manned his bowsprit, brought his spritsail yard fore and aft, and resolved to board the other, which the Dutch perceiving, and terrified with the unhappy fate of their comrade, thought a farther resistance vain, and immediately struck. Misson gave them good quarters, though he was enraged at the loss of 13 men killed outright, beside 9 wounded, of which 6 died. They found on board a great quantity of gold and silver lace, brocade silks, silk stockings, bales of broadcloth, bases of all colors, and osnabres. A consultation being held, it was resolved Captain Misson should take the name of Urban, and returning to Carthagena, dispose of his prize, and set his prisoners ashore. Accordingly they plied to the eastward, and came to an anchor between Boca Chica Fort and the town, for they did not think it expedient to enter the harbor. The barge was manned, and Caraccioli, with the name of De Bigny the first lieutenant, who was killed in the engagement with the Winchelsea, and his commission in his pocket, went ashore with a letter to the governor, signed Urban, whose character, for fear of the worst, was exactly counterfeited. The purport of his letter was, that having discretionary orders, to cruise for 3 months, and hearing the English infested his coast, he was come in search of them, and had met 2 Dutch men, one of which he had sunk, the other he made prize of. That his limited time being near expired, he should be obliged to His Excellency, if he would send on board him such merchants as were willing to take the ship and cargo off his hands, of which he had lent the Dutch invoice. Don Joseph de Lazerda, the then governor, received the lieutenant who sent back the barge at landing, very civilly, and agreed to take the prisoners ashore, and do everything was required of him, and ordering fresh provisions and salading to be got ready as a present for the captain, he sent for some merchants who were very ready to go on board, and agree for the ship and goods, which they did, for 2,500 pieces of 8. The next day the prisoners were set ashore, a rich piece of brocade which was reserved, sent to the governor for a present, a quantity of fresh provision bought and brought on board, the money paid by the merchants, the ship and goods delivered, and the victor, at the dawn of the following day, got under sail. It may be wondered how such dispatch could be made, but the reader must take notice. These goods were sold by the Dutch invoice, which the merchant of the prize affirmed was genuine. I shall observe, by the by, that the victor was the French man of war which Admiral Wager sent to Kingston in search of, and being afterwards falsely informed that she was joined by another of 70 guns, and that they cruised together between the capes, ordered the Severn up to windward, to assist the Kingston, which had like to have proved very fatal, for these two English men of war, commanded by Captain Trevor and Captain Padner, meeting in the night, had prepared to engage, each taking the other for the enemy. The Kingston's men not having a good lookout, which must be attributed to the negligence of the officer of the watch, did not see the Severn till she was just upon them. But, by good luck, to leeward, and plying up, with all the sail she could crowd, and a clear ship. This put the Kingston in such confusion, that when the Severn hailed, no answer was returned, for none heard her. She was got under the Kingston's stern, and Captain Padner ordered to hail for the third and last time, and if no answer was returned, to give her a broadside. The noise on board the Kingston was now a little ceased, and Captain Trevor, who was on the poop with a speaking trumpet to hail the Severn, by good Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.